Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Aloha, Marty Dredd. How you doing?
Everything is all right, man. Hawaii is nicer than nice right now because the beaches are empty. Tourists all went home, so I'm just enjoying paradise like how it used to be.
Well, welcome to Bob Rader, man. It's nice talking to you, right? So just for a little history for our listeners, Marty and I go way back about 25 years. We've been working together doing reggae music for a long, long time. And we've been good friends for a long time. And I just wanted to catch up with him because you've been very, very busy lately. But before we get into all the new stuff, let's get into how did Marty Dredd fall in love with reggae music and become a reggae DJ and producer and a consultant? And so let's get into the origins of your footsteps into the reggae world, into the reggae industry.
All right. Well, the year was 1980, and I was like a 10-year-old kid. And my sister we had moved to Hawaii when I was 8 from New York.
Okay.
I'm a native New Yorker, but my family moved out here when I was 8. But a couple of years into that, my sister hooked up with this Hawaiian guy, and her boyfriend was from Hana.
Okay.
And he used to drive back and forth to Hana to visit my sister pretty much 2-3 times a week. If you know anything about Maui and Hana, it's, you know, a 2-hour drive each way. It's
yeah.
A crazy drive. Anyway, he would come out and visit my sister all the time, and I got to know him.
The bottom road, the bottom road. Just let them know, it's the bottom road with no lights, no nothing, country.
Yeah, the Hana Highway.
Yeah. Okay, keep going.
So they used to drive back and forth to see each other, and I used to go along on those journeys, and he used to play an 8-track in his VW Bug. He had an 8-track player in his car.
Mm-hmm.
And the album he played pretty much every trip was Bob Marley, Rastaman Vibration.
Okay.
And during one summer, I probably listened to that record in the full cycle maybe 70, 80 times, and I just fell in love with that. All of those songs, Rat Race, Want More, obviously Positive Vibration, Roots Rock Reggae. I was
It's a great record. It's an amazing, it's a landmark album.
Yeah, man, it's a wonderful record. Wonderful record. I didn't know the significance of Bob Marley. I just knew that the song spoke more like the Bible. It wasn't like regular pop music like Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie and all the stuff people were listening to.
Right.
He was saying some really deep stuff. So I fell in love with that particular album, and then I started to collect everything by him that
okay.
I could. And then before I knew it, 1981 rolled around and he passed.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I really got intrigued. Why is everybody so sad that this particular guy passed on?
Mm-hmm.
So, as my teenage years moved on, I started collecting Peter Tosh and Bunny Wailer and Gregory Isaacs and John Holt. And I started collecting all the reggae I could find. And my classmates and my friends were so baffled. Like, why are you collecting this kind of music? We don't even barely understand what this is about.
Right.
Anyway, by the time I was 17, I was a junior in high school. Just by chance, I met a DJ, and the DJ had the first ever reggae radio show in Hawaii. That program was called the KAOI Reggae Show, and he had 1 hour on Saturday night.
Okay.
He played all reggae music, and I used to tune in all the time.
Okay.
So I met the dude in Paihia, and I just walked up to him and said, "You the guy that does the radio show?" He said, "Yeah, that's me." I said, "Well, I have a bunch of record albums and cassettes of stuff in my collection that I'm not hearing you play, so either you don't have it, or you just don't like those particular albums. And he said, oh, so you have a big collection of reggae. I go, yeah, I do. I have a lot. He said, why don't you come in and answer the telephones? You know, come into the show and kind of like help me out.
Yeah.
Answer the phones for me. So how it goes, I'm giving you the background of my career as a radio disc jockey.
Awesome, awesome. I love it. I love it. This is all new to me.
I went in that first night, and, you know, people would call to make requests. Hey, can I hear Bunny Wailer, Arab Oil Weapon, or whatever. Whatever their request might be. And I, every time I picked up the phone, I knew the answer to the reggae question right away. And he was like, this kid really does know this music. He said, answer it again. And the next call would come, and they would ask something about Roots Radix. And I go, oh, yeah, they have a new album coming out with Israel Vibration. Like, he saw right away that I knew this.
You knew the music. You knew the music. You were a student of the music.
Yeah, I knew the music. That's because I was collecting and reading every book I could find. I had watched Countryman by then and How Do They Come, and you know what I mean? I was like,
yeah.
Fully. So,
rockers.
Some weeks went by. I came to the radio station every week, you know, and then I became his protege or his apprentice, as it were. And then he eventually met someone and got married and moved on. And he handed me that radio show like a football. He basically said, I'm leaving Hawaii. You are now the DJ. And okay. I'm still in high school now. I'm like a senior in high school.
What?
So I did most of the original reggae radio show, and it went from 1 hour on a Saturday night to 5 hours.
Whoa!
On a Saturday night. Then, as the years went by, reggae became so popular that because of the music I was playing, I was breaking artists like Frankie Paul and Sanchez and Ross Shiloh, and people had never heard any of these artists before.
Right.
So I was really creating something.
You were making the big waves.
Right, well, all the while the Hawaiian scene was percolating underneath because they were hearing all these songs on the radio that they had never heard before. So, and all the cover songs that you heard back then, they all heard them first on my radio show.
Right.
So, anyway, so that radio career went on. I did that for 27 years total. I rose to the position of program director. I went to Oahu to start a radio station on Oahu, 98.5.
Wow.
But all that time, I knew I wanted to be a singer. I wanted to be... Because, you know, what happens when you work in radio is you get the knack for picking the hit song, like the song that everyone's going to like. If I listen down to a whole album by, let's call it, Barrington Levy, I pretty much can say, yep, track two is the single.
Right, sure right, enough, right, yeah. Works. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So that,
I know you mean exactly what you
training,
mean.
Yeah, man, so that kind of training makes you... a songwriter, because you know what, you know, how to craft the kind of tunes that people would actually vibe with.
Would gravitate to and resonate,
Exactly. So at the time, right after I graduated from high school, I was a painter too. I used to paint whales and like seascapes and stuff.
Okay.
I won this art competition to go to Honolulu from Maui.
Okay.
To go receive my award. And the night before I left, my mom told me, she said, son, it's something you should know. Your forefathers, like on my dad's side, they were all whalers on the East Coast. That's what they did. They harvested whales. So
okay.
I was like, really? I just felt really like, wow, if someone found this out, I would be seen as a hypocrite of being a painter of whales. But I stopped painting. On that one day, I stopped painting. Right?
Okay.
So, well, what happened was, based on that painting, I got chosen... go to the Soviet Union, to Russia, to represent Maui and paint this big mural called the Maui to Moscow Mural, which was a gift of aloha from the kids of America to the kids of Russia. Because, you know, the leaders back then, this a little bit of foreground, the Cold War was still
going on. Yeah, the Cold War was going on. Iron Curtain, Berlin Wall, all that stuff,
Gorbachev was still in power. And,
yeah.
Anyway, so I got chosen to go there as an artist with some kids from America. We get to the Soviet Union. This is I'm explaining to you this because this is the very day I knew for sure I would be a musician the rest of my life. We get to the Soviet Union. We raise our own money. We get there. We just wanted to be pen pals and friends with the kids. The whole mission statement was that the kids of this world need to get it together and be friends so that when they assume power, they'll be friendly already. You know, the ideology, the old school ideology won't be there. They'll be already kind of getting to know each other.
Right. Build connections from early.
Yeah, building bridges instead of walls, you know?
Yeah.
With the kids.
Yeah.
So we get there, and we walk into this gymnasium. There's about six American kids, and the announcer comes on and says, it's a gymnasium of about 1,500, 2,000 Soviet students. So imagine a full-packed gym full of kids. We walk in, and the announcer says, these kids came from America to make friends with you, to be your pen pals, and to start, you know, alliances with you guys.
Yeah, build relationships.
You guys grow up and to be leaders of this world, you'll be friends. And nobody said a word. Nobody. I mean, you could have a pin drop in that gym.
Okay.
So we're like, oh, man, they're not feeling this at all. We should probably just leave. I just so happened to look backstage, and I saw an acoustic guitar. It only had five strings of the six.
Oh, that wow.
Year, I went back in, I grabbed it, and I walked up to the microphone stand, and I just said, hi, guys, my name is Marty, and, you know, I just really wanted to play you guys a song, and hopefully we can be friends. Mm-hmm. And I played Twist and Shout by the Isley Brothers.
Okay.
People think that's a Beatles song, but I'm pretty sure it's the Isley Brothers, too.
Okay.
So, boss, by the time that song was done, every kid was on the dance floor dancing with us, hugging on us.
Oh, wow.
That's so cool. We want to be your pen pal. We want to be friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, that one song just completely obliterated any political barriers, any language barrier, any fear that anybody had.
Right.
They all immediately, based off music, they wanted to be our friend.
Sure.
And from that day in Russia, I said, I'm going to be a musician the rest of my life. I just know this medium is way more powerful than painting. And I had been listening to Bob Marley all through my high school and the music of Jamaica. And I said, you know what? There's a message in this music. It's not just, you know, let's go drink beer and go dance and smoke herb. It's a real, real conscious message about freedom and things that they wouldn't teach you in school.
Yeah, international awareness and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I learned about apartheid. I learned about, you know, Gandhi. All these people that you don't necessarily learn their story in school books, but
no.
Reggae musicians talk about these people, right? So
yeah.
It was
Stephen
such a wonderful
Biko,
education.
Marcus Garvey.
Yeah. Right. Toussaint Louverture, all these people that were, you know, a lot of them were snuffed out, unfortunately. Walter Rodney, a lot of those martyrs, as we call them, the freedom fighters.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, I became a musician on that day. I came back to Hawaii, and I still had my radio station job, but I was on a mission now to be a songwriter. So I got together with some of the kids from my high school. We started a little band called Culture Shock.
Okay.
And we started playing locally around. We practiced for a year or two before we ever played live, and we started playing in bookstores and, you know, like local venues. And people kind of started to like our original songs. We were also playing songs by, like, Heine Kamozi and, you know, Peter Broggs. We were playing some deep roots music, too. But I was writing the whole time. I was trying to become a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point, you know, I put my first record out in 1994.
Okay.
As a band, it was called Marty Dredd and Culture Shock, was the name of my band.
Okay.
And something very interesting happened during the process of making that record. I took a loan from the bank. We didn't take it as a band. I took a loan, me personally.
Okay.
I was a 19-year-old kid.
Okay.
Took a loan from the bank to produce his first album. Because by then we had been playing and we had our original songs ready to record.
Okay.
So we went to a studio on the Big Island. We all left Maui. We went to the Big Island to record this record. And we all tracked it together. And then when it was time to mix, everybody in the band wanted to go back to the Big Island and mix the album. And the producer was like, one guy comes. If you have six of you guys in here saying, turn me up, we don't have a mix. We have a mess. So just one of you guys come.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, man. Well, you know, I can't not come with it. I know the band's going to be mad. I'm not joking. I told the band what the producer said. I'm just going to go back by myself and mix this. You guys got to trust me. And they all quit.
Oh, wow.
The whole band quit. I had, you know, a $40,000 loan back in 1994.
That's a lot of money back then.
Yeah, because we're
buying
tours and hotels per diems and rare.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they quit. I had a record to produce, I had a record to promote, and no band.
Crazy.
So I was like, oh man, this is a tough one. So I worked and I found other bands. I did solo gigs and I did all this stuff to pay that record back.
Right.
Eventually, I did. But the second record I made, which was called Reggae for Love, I worked with one producer who played keyboard, bass.
I remember that
he
record.
He played guitar, harmony. He was, this guy is like one of my mentors in life. His name is Ron Rhodes.
Okay.
He played with a band called The Shakers. The Shakers was a reggae band from Berkeley.
Right.
It was the first American reggae band to ever be signed to a major. They were signed to Electra Asylum in the 70s.
The Shakers.
So he really knew reggae music. The okay. Shakers, yeah.
Okay.
He really knew reggae music. So the second record I did, just me and him. He played everything I sang and DJed, and he played all the music and produced and mixed.
Okay.
And sang harmony and all this stuff. And that record, that second yeah. record, Reggae for Love, was 1997, outsold the first one 4-1.
Oh, wow.
But by then, I had figured out that I could use my radio station to promote me.
Right.
You know, I wasn't promoting me. I was promoting reggae.
Right.
But at that point, when I started putting records out, people could request my songs on my radio station, and everywhere I played live, they could come see me.
Right.
So it was a match made in heaven. That's how I became Marty Dredd, the household name in Hawaii, because right. I had the radio station as my promotion. You know, that's what I did.
Right on.
So, you know, and then the years went by. Pretty much every year I put out a record, I could do a bunch of gigs, make some money. I started touring. I did California. I met you the first few times. I played at the Coach House, and then I played at House of Blues in L.A. We played down in San Diego with Common Sense. That's how I met you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And kind of started
and touring. And
right?
Roberto, yeah.
Yes, Roberto and Gotti, exactly.
Yeah.
So I met Roberto through my ex-manager, who is now departed, unfortunately, rest his soul, Mark Taylor, Seventh Wave. He was my first manager, actually, my band's first manager.
Okay, yeah, I remember Mark. Five Corners Music.
You remember Mark, yeah. His company was called Seventh Wave.
Seventh Wave, that's what it was.
Yeah, my record label is called Five Corners, because that's where I live in Hawaii, Five Corners in Haiku.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I remember when you came, we did a show over at the G Lounge, and it was all kinds of fun. The whole band stayed at the house over here in Ocean Beach. And yeah, it was those were great times. That was the late 90s.
You took me out for the best Mexican food I ever had in my life at that point.
That place is still open.
That's San Diego for you.
That place is still open.
Nice one.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, what an amazing career. I mean, to get involved with reggae music and then have a band and keep on producing and be involved on the radio and rise in your, you know, through the corporate ranks up through the radio station and be programming director, all these kind of things, super amazing, right? And then for a long time, you were really, like, really rocking hard. You were, like, touring all over the place, all over the world, Japan, you know, you name it, you were there. Reggae on the River, Reggae, Sierra Nevada World Music Festival, all kinds of stuff.
Yep, Reggae on the Rock.
Reggae
Midwest
on the Rock.
Midwest Reggae Fest, we've done that together a few times.
Yeah, we did Reggae Ohio, the Midwest Reggae Fest, we did that a bunch of times too. So that was all kinds of fun. And then so at one point when we were talking, you came to this point in your career where, like, you know what, I have a conflict of interest. I'm a reggae artist, but I'm also on the radio. I can't be on the radio anymore. I want to dedicate strictly to focus on my career and work on my artist, on my creativity, instead of being on the radio and stuff. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Exactly right. Yeah, you know, I got to the point where it really was, you hit the nail right on the head. It became, the king of self-promotion, because mind you, back then, there were no other reggae bands in Hawaii. There was, I mean, really, we were the only cats out there at that point. There were one or two, like, what they call Jawaiian bands, but as far as a reggae band who played Jamaican-style reggae, it was just us. So we were gigging four or five nights a week on Maui, but I was using the radio station to fuel all of that.
Right.
So I was saying, okay, Wednesday night we're at Casanova, Saturday night we're on the west side, so it was a perfect thing. But what happened during those years, I think, the reason why I eventually had to stop radio, concurrently two things happened. Radio became very corporate, and they started introducing the computer, so the DJ could no longer create a set of music that he wanted. They fill the computer with, you know, 100, 200 songs and the same songs.
With what they want to hear.
All day, and you just, and you just poke your voice in once in a while, and but you don't have a choice over what spins. So once it got like that, I was like, okay, this is close to the end. Mm-hmm. And then, at the same time, I had made so many great liaisons from Jamaica. Every single reggae act that toured here during those years, I was the guy who picked them up at the airport. I was the guy who went and got herb for them. I was the guy who cut coconuts for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's how I got my name, the Reggae Ambassador. If you ask anybody from Toots to Ziggy Marley, any Jamaican that's ever toured here, they know me from being the guy that picked them up at the airport.
Oh, yeah.
I took them to the radio station.
You know what's so fun is being at a show with you and then running into reggae artists and then them being so friendly with you and then being so friendly with us. It's like, oh, yeah, we know each other.
It's very funny.
So fun.
You're the same. You're an ambassador.
Yeah. I just have a love for reggae music and the message and the vibration that it carries and stuff. Just like you know, the original infection you got, the original intoxication you got from reggae music is the same intoxication infection I have. You know, I just love it. I have it for life. It's something that I see myself doing for a long time. And, you know, I just love connecting with beautiful people like you and Tip Iree and Kino and all these people from around the world. And it's great to be part of this family, you know what I mean? And then, like, I know one of the songs that you sing is My Father, My Friend, Levi Myers, right?
My Father, My Friend was actually written by A.J. Brown, who is now the lead singer of Third World.
A.J. Brown, excuse me, pardon me on that. Yeah, My Father, My Friend. And, I really gravitate to that song myself because, it's like, I came to this country and I didn't really have a family, right? Like I can't, you know, we migrated here from Colombia and we came here to the United States and I didn't have like aunts or uncles I could go to and find out what's going on with the culture and be taught about what's going on here and there and the other place and everything. But like when I did settle into reggae music, I found that, you know, when I met an artist, I was like, oh, that's like my uncle. I know that's like my sister, and that's like, you know, he's like a father figure to me, or something like that. So anytime I made these connections with these guys, it was like family, and every time I would see them, it was like a family reunion. And so, like,
that,
you know what I mean? You don't understand what I'm saying? Yeah,
100%. Because I feel exactly the same. In fact, I was, you know, like I said, my dad died when I was 8, which is the reason my family moved to Hawaii. And for me, discovering Bob Marley before I was 12 was that he became my moral compass. He became the father figure or the male role model. Everything I did, I crafted after the way, how would Bob have done this? What would he have said about this topic? How would he have dealt with this in a more simple human way? That became, I mean, Bob Marley was my first father figure.
Yeah.
My real father side.
Yeah.
And every reggae artist that came into my life touched me in a certain different way, like that. Like they imparted their wisdom on me, or they gave me, you know, some
insight,
instructions, or something.
A little nugget of wisdom of how to be a Rasta man, how to know yourself, and how to deal with society, and how Babylon has their tricks and things like that, right?
Exactly. And the wonderful thing about the radio station was it gave me the opportunity to meet all the reggae artists that passed through Hawaii. Everyone.
Yeah.
I was the guy who was there, the Hawaii point person. And to this day, like if Sky High and Junior Gong land, like, where's Marty? Or if, you know what I mean, if Third World is here, they're like, I don't see any coconuts at the airport, where's Marty?
Exactly.
That person.
Yeah.
So it's a wonderful thing. It's being part of an extended family of musicians and producers and now reggae is so global. I mean, I've got friends like the Matt Professor and Tip Iree and these guys in England, and then you've got the Gondwanas, and you've got the Tribal de Jazz in Brazil.
Ross Muhammad.
And everywhere.
Mongols Hi-Fi.
Yeah,
I mean, like, crazy, right?
Right.
It is insane. It is crazy. You know, this is the thing that I was talking to Keno about. I was like, Keno, I'm like, you know what? When we were young lions in this whole thing, you know, all we wanted to do was spread John music to the four corners of the world. And, you know, I think our mission has pretty much been complete. I mean, like, reggae music is in every country and every county and every city and every town that I can think of for, yep. You know, that has some type of internet connection or whatever, you know, open society.
Even in places you wouldn't expect it. Like, I've been in Thailand and people are pounding reggae music in a club, and I'm like, how do they know? How does the selector know these rhythms? And how do they know? I mean, it's amazing. I just think about the sound system culture in Europe or Japan.
Oh my God, it's crazy. The sound system culture is...
staggering. Some of them know more about Jamaican reggae than some Jamaicans do.
Oh, and even more,
probably
even
speaking loudly, but it's true.
And more so than some of the Cali Roots band, they know way more about the culture of reggae music than the sound system culture guys are heavy into it. And to me, that's the emerging front of reggae music, sound system. That's the next wave. That's the next big thing. To me, that's what I think is going to be. Capturing people's attention. So we have this wave of Cali Roots, California reggae, USA reggae, white reggae, whatever you want to call it, blue-eyed reggae, however you want to call it. I think the next wave is going to be sound system. But anyway.
I think the sound systems have wings because, you know, it's more mobile. You don't have to take 13 guys on the road.
Right.
You just take your Serato and your laptop and you're gone, right? So.
Yeah. And some of these guys have a little more. Sophisticated setups like Ableton and like what Mad Prof does. He brings his whole mixing board and his Ableton and his tracks, and they dub it out like Subatomic Sound System and stuff like that. It's amazing, right? It's amazing. Like Lee Scratch.
I'm so happy that people will be able to see that live if it does become, you know, more popular and more normal to see a sound system, you know, where people can come out and they know all the songs, and when they get it forward, they pull up the song, and that's part of reggae culture, that's part of dance culture, dance hall culture. So
I'm seeing
you've been doing that for years, right?
Yeah,
you've been
that
in between acts, and you know, you've been doing that for years.
But I
do think it's going to have another resurgence for sure too. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's like there's a split. There's like, you know, I talked to DJ Z-Trip. He lives here in San Diego. And Z-Trip is like, well, either you're a vibes DJ or you're a performance DJ, right? If you're a vibes DJ, you can play songs between bands and blah, 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 and give a little good vibe. Or you could be like a DJ that comes out and you give a performance with a MC, or you have a set pattern of things that you actually want to do in a time sequence fashion that is very consistent, right? And so, and then you have that, and then you also have like, and I think that's where the sound system, the current sound system guys like Josh Shaka, Iration Steppers, Vibronix, all these awesome sound systems are just mashing, crushing sound, like the dances are just so much more fun than, to me, like a regular, like, play hit song dance.
Look how much ammo they have at their fingertips, and they're loaded with all the music that they ever know and love inside of their hard drive.
Yeah.
So they can look at a crowd and know exactly what to play and when.
Exactly.
And when to hold that one tune until the crowd is at a fever pitch.
Yeah.
It's an art form, man. It truly is, and you've been doing that for years. Some of my favorite shows actually in the last 20 years were working with Mad Professor, like we did one in Brazil that was crazy off the charts. I've done it with him in Canada a couple times. I mean, people just freak out. They've never seen live dub.
He's so good live. His sound system shows are so nice. So nice. Anyway, let's get back to Marty Dredd. Let's get back to Marty Dredd. So, Marty, when we did the preview to the interview, you said you have 6 albums ready to roll. What's going on with that? Tell me about your new records. But before you tell me about the new records,
Okay.
Tell me about the work you've done with Willie Nelson, because that is the next big thing in your career, was working with Willie Nelson.
That, and it continues to happen, actually. he has just been very gracious with me, and we live on the same island. You know, he lives here part-time when he's not on the road, which isn't very often, and he plays, you know, probably still over 100 shows a year still.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know, it's just a magic thing. You wouldn't think he would be as open as he is, but man, the guy can play anything, wants to play everything. He just breathes music. So one of these six records I have is a duet project with Willie. And some of it's produced by Matt Professor. There's some Sly Robbie tracks.
Oh, nice.
It's just basically Willie and then Million Seven from Santa Cruz. He produced some of the tracks. It's a full-blown ganja tune.
It's yeah, Willie's Willie known for that.
me and Willie trading verses on a... But it's like a real Rasta reggae track, and if you listen to it,
okay,
it's not a commercial track. It's a real deep reggae cut.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's one of the records I'm about to drop. It's called Laws of Nature, mm-hmm. and it's nine tunes of Marty and Willie together.
Okay.
And he's just been, over the years, he's been so gracious. I mean, I've done Farm Aid with him in several cities. And I'm talking about playing in a stadium with John Mellencamp and Bob Dylan and Dave Matthews, and he'll just call me on stage, "Hey, my friend from Hawaii is here. Let's have him up here to come sing a song." He's just so gracious with me.
You did Farm Aid a couple times. I mean, you played some major shows with this guy.
Yeah, he actually just did one here in Hawaii. It was about 4 months ago, I suspect now.
Okay.
And I opened for him, and, you know, he was in really fine voice, and it's always nice to be able to share the stage with an icon, you know, and he's such a wonderful guy.
That's awesome. He's great. So that one of the six records is with Willie Nelson. Tell us about some of these other records that you got going on right now.
So I've got a volume one and a volume two of what I'm calling In Good Company, and it's duets. I've got duets with pretty much a who's who of reggae guys from Hawaii, and also there's Junior Reed and Anthony B, and, you know, I have a lot of sort of special guests like Irie Love and Mishka, and, you know, just, so it's like a whole collection of duets, and then there's a volume two, so there's a whole next, so there's about 30 of those. So that's two albums. I already told you about one of them, which is the Willie Nelson project.
Right.
And then I have a record called Positive People, which I started by going to Kingston and recording with Flying Robbie a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a fair amount of recording done with those guys down there, and then I collected a few more singles. So this one is more like a real, you know, old school reggae record.
Okay. Like a classic.
That's five. Yeah, it's a classic roots record. You know?
Okay.
It's kind of got the Black Uhuru sound, the Flying Robbie sound, a lot of it.
Okay.
And then I actually kind of, in the last two or three years, I've been working on this record that I'm going to be, not called Marty Dread, but my real name, Martin Hennessy.
Okay.
That's, you know, that's my given name, my born name.
Okay.
And this is more like a Americana country western rock record. And a lot of it, I think, probably was influenced by a lot of the music I was listening on tour. When I was on tour with Willie, I would hear all this music in the bus, and a lot of my songs, because I really consider myself a songwriter. I mean, I've written a lot of songs in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these songs that I write are not necessarily geared toward the reggae genre. Like, they don't fit in that genre.
I hear you, bridges
and all kinds of stuff. They don't lend themselves to a reggae rhythm. So I collected a bunch of those tunes, 15 of them, and I kind of went in a different direction for this record. It's called Mr. Right Now, by Martin Hennessy, which is my name.
Nice.
So that's going to drop on my birthday, which is June 4th.
Right on. Very cool. So you have a Sly Robbie record, Matt Professor record, you have your duets record, you have your classic folk rock, two of those, your classic rock record. And what's the next one?
I think that's six, isn't it?
Is that six? Okay, right.
So there's two duet records.
Two duets, okay.
One is a volume one, and one is a volume two.
Okay. Awesome stuff, man. And so, I mean, that's very awesome stuff. Now, what I also see what you're doing is you're doing this boat cruise out in Maui. You do a sunset boat cruise. Well, you had been doing one until this whole crazy world crisis is going on. But can you tell us about that? How's that going? How did you get started with that? What happened right there?
In 2008, when the economy went south, when the whole Wall Street stock market crash happened, I was playing in Lahaina with my band for, you know, 25 years straight. We pretty much owned Monday night. If you ever were in Lahaina on a Monday, it was reggae night, and it was my band playing. We did every club in Lahaina for 25 years of Monday nights. We did it. So when that all came to a close because the economy went to shit,
right?
I probably can't say that on the radio, but
okay, we're good.
Basically, the economy went to the toilet, right?
Right.
And so bands got laid off everywhere. People weren't going out. We weren't spending money. So, and I noticed that the boats were still going out full of tourists when the whales were in town. So I just had this idea. I would approach the Pacific Whale Foundation and say, look, I noticed you guys don't do music on your boat, but it's a huge boat. I mean, this dance floor can fit 150 people on the bow. So I said, well, would you guys be interested in me coming and lending my celebrity to a quote-unquote reggae cruise? And they were like, I don't know if it worked. So how I sweetened it was, I said, you don't have to pay me a salary.
Okay.
I'll just take a certain amount per hit, and I'll promote it.
Okay.
You know, because that's what I've done all my life.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a great way to do it. That's the best motivation. Pay me per head. That makes me work.
We already had a following from the clubs. It's just people had nowhere to go see the band anymore. So I just sort of graduated to the boat, and it was sold out from the first week. This is my eighth season right now, and it's 2 hours of trying to envision this. It's 2 hours at sunset time. There's whales jumping, dolphins swimming by. Amazing sunset in the background.
It looks amazing. I can't wait to go.
And it's reggae music. It's reggae music playing, you know what I mean? So it's really a dream job. If I think about all the gigs I've had, all the jobs I've had, it's almost like I graduated to this. This is sort of like all the years I put in, all the work that I've done, honing my craft, you know, figuring out song selection, how to work a crowd, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Culminates.
You're a master now. You're a master now, Marty. You've been doing this thing like almost 30 years now. 30 years?
Well, it's a very international crowd. You know, there are Canadians there, Japanese people come on. I have to look at the crowd every single week. It's a completely different crowd. So it's like I'm on tour every week. I don't have to go in. The whole world comes to me on this boat.
Yeah,
it's pretty fascinating, actually. And I can read that crowd. If it's younger people, they want to hear more current stuff. If it's older folks, they might want to hear, you know, like Motown-ish, Beatles-ish kind of.
So I
can really just use it to make it like a real show. Because it's become, you know, one of the top activities on the island.
Oh, no.
Sold out every week in whale season.
Oh, I know. And you tell people, it's like, hey, get your tickets. This one's sold out. Ride one is sold out. Get your tickets for ride two. This thing is going on. It's going on nice, man. That, you know, it's great.
Awesome.
It's like one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. You playing reggae music on the ocean in Hawaii. I mean, like, what else do you want? I mean, like, really? You know, it's Ivory Vibes.
I don't think I'm ever going to find a better gig. I don't think I'll ever find a better gig.
Well, I'm glad I hope they're taking care of you.
It truly makes people happy, Carlos. I mean, if you could just see it with your own eyes. People walk on that boat apprehensive, like, well, we're going to hear reggae for 2.5 hours. And they leave huge fans. They want me to sign up autographs for them, and they buy CDs, and they're like fans for life. Instagram, I'm like, man, I won them over with reggae music. You know what I mean? That people that weren't necessarily fans of reggae, people tell me that all the time. I don't like reggae; I can barely dance to it, but I like you. Like, I like how you present it.
No, I believe you, man.
I can understand the words you sing. You know, and you sing songs that I know. You know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like the greatest thing about being in the music for so long. I can gauge a crowd what kind of music they want to hear. Or what I think they want to hear, and maybe pick out one or two people in the crowd to see how they're vibing, and then work off their vibe, and who they're attracting and stuff. It's nice to be able to judge a crowd. You know, with all the years that we've been doing this, it's nice to see the looks on the faces and the reactions, and hit the right strokes and the right melodies and the right lyrics, and then bring everybody into the circle. You know.
Yeah, it's an art form that you spent years crafting. You know, now you're a good painter because you all those years you studied the craft of how to do it and how to rock a room, basically. You walk into a room cold, they're not necessarily in the vibe yet, but you get them there.
Yeah.
You know, you take...
Absolutely, man. Man, Marty, it's been a pleasure and an honor talking to you. You've done so much for reggae music, and you've been, you know, really, you are the front line general in Hawaii for reggae music, right? All these bands, The Green, even from New Zealand, Catch a Fire, those guys are part of your circle. You know, you're grandfather to them. You know,
I'm a bit older than most of them. Yes, I'm a bit older than most of them, and I just happen to be the guy that was there when it was all beginning, and I feel very fortunate to have been in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was really like destiny to meet Jem and Jamiko, the radio host that got me my first shot on radio. And, you know, it was all just pretty much just, it's been a wonderful journey. I know it's far from over, but it's been, if it stopped today, I mean, like it stopped right now because of this coronavirus business, but if it was done, I could look back on it and really say it was a life that was very worthy of living.
Oh, man, so much, man. I don't even think about that, you know, thinking back and some of the stuff that we've done together and some of the stuff I've done alone and some of the impact that I felt like maybe I've seen evidence that I've made. It's amazing to see that the impression that we've made with reggae music. And, you know, it's nice, you know, to be a brother with you in this whole movement and push the music forward, you know?
Yes, I.
You know?
Yeah. It's really nice to see these younger bands that are coming up, especially the American-based ones, that have, you know, I think a lot of them get it, that there were people here before them that paved the way for what they now enjoy. And I think a lot of them do get it. They pay homage to it. They take a Don Carlos on the road with them. They take a Barrington on the road with
them. You
know what?
You've hit it right on the head, Marty. Because for early on, I felt like some of these California American reggae bands weren't really paying tribute to the culture, and they were playing whatever they wanted, how garagey or however it came out. As long as they had their fan base and they could sell tickets and sell a lot of records, it was cool. But in the last 5 years, I felt like it's even changed a little bit. It's like a lot of these guys are like, you know what? It's not just whatever. The bass belongs here. The guitar belongs here. The keyboard belongs here. The drums belong here.
Mm-hmm.
This is the style. This is the pattern. This is how it should be done. We're going to put our own little vibe into it, but this is where the pocket is. We're going to get you guys in the pocket with us. And I feel like a whole bunch of these bands have found that pocket and really taken up their musicianship a lot of levels. I mean, it's amazing. I've been here at the front line. I've been seeing all these California bands for a long, long time. And they've really stepped up their game. And more of them are paying tribute to their foundation and the actual culture of reggae music. And it's inspiring, you know. And it's nice to hear you say that.
Yeah. When I hear them, I can tell they study. They listen to that music. It's not like they're just creating their own way. They're listening to foundational artists like Hugh Mundell and Junior E. They're listening to that stuff for sure. Half Pint.
Yeah.
They're studying those records. When they bring it to their own band and they, you know, they put their own little vibe in it, like you say. But it's all basically foundational Jamaican roots reggae.
Yeah.
They're all playing one drop style. They're not really playing like hardcore dancehall or anything.
No.
It's like vintage rockers, 70s rockers reggae at its core, yet they just put like their own little spin on it because, you know, they're kids that were raised on the West Coast, or, you know, they have a different thing to say. They're not necessarily talking
like
about
the waves,
suffering in the ghetto and...
Yeah,
they're not talking about...
It's like what Logan from Catch a Fire says, like, you know, reggae music doesn't have to be all about the separation. It can be about friendship. It can be about love. It can be about sunshine. It can be about things that we, you know, care about. It doesn't all have to be super heavy, you know.
Well, it's a vehicle for whatever you're feeling. Whatever you're feeling, reggae music is a wonderful vehicle to get it across because it's such a happy music. People just automatically feel at ease. You could be at a like hardcore hip-hop show or a rock show, and they put on a Bob Marley tune, and the whole place, the whole vibe just
changes.
You see that all the time there.
Yeah.
Right. So that's it's like somebody said it. I'm not sure if it's Roger Stephens said it or whoever said it, but at its core, reggae music, and my bingi drumming, it's the soundtrack of the human heart at rest. And I think the Jamaicans kind of got that. They do. And you listen to the music, and it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Thing about this music, it's just super airy, super laid back, super cool. If it's played right, like if you went to a show back in the day that was like Radix backing, you know, Drag Ride.
Drag Rig culture.
You did not feel that groove. That pocket was so fat and so deep. Yeah. You couldn't help but just stand there and rock.
Yeah, yeah. Burning Spear, just like melted in my boots, just like, you know, man.
And the list goes on.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Well, awesome conversation with you. Great talking to you. So,
yeah.
Now, our friends want to find out more about Marty Dread. What's your website? What's your Instagram? All your stuff. Tell us how we can make contact with you.
All right. So my website is martydread.com. It's MartyDread, martydread.com. And I'm also on Twitter. It's Maui Dread on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. But if you just search Marty Dread on any of those social media platforms, I'm there. I have SoundCloud. You know, I'm pretty up to snuff on all of the modern technologies. I'm on Pandora. I'm on Spotify.
Fantastic.
Probably 150 tunes of mine on Spotify and all those.
Wicked,
places.
wicked.
So, as a general search, if you search for Marty Dread, particularly if you want to connect with me on social media, like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, it's very easy to find.
All right. Now, Marty, if somebody wants to, like, it might be too much for someone to find all your best songs. You already have a greatest hits. What is the name of your greatest hits album?
Actually, I have two. One's called The Hits 93 to 2003.
Okay.
And one's called The Hits 2003 to 2010. So now I need, I guess, in the last 10 years, I've had a lot of great songs. So I guess I need to do a volume.
You need volume 3. You need volume 3, my brother.
I've never done a definitive greatest hit. I've just done sort of like, these were the popular songs of this era, and then the next 8 years.
Right.
I've never done a greatest hit, but I just feel like my greatest hit hasn't been made yet.
Okay. Right on, man. We're looking forward to that. I can see that happening. I can actually really see that happening. That is really cool stuff, man. Well, hey, awesome stuff talking to you, Marty. Thank you for your time, your effort, your energy, your participation, your ambassadorship to the reggae music, your love, your devotion, a devotee of Haile Selassie and all the reggae trimmings that we love to get into. Thank you for your participation and your courage and your honor and all the stuff that you've put into it.
Thank you for saying that, and send it right back at you, because I see you as a mirror of myself. You literally have the same journey under your belt, and you're one of those people that as soon as you walk in the room, a light goes on, and that's you. So we need you in this world, so keep doing what you're doing, bro, and I really appreciate you reaching out to me.
Yeah, man. It's awesome talking to you again, man. All right, I'm gonna close the interview here.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.